I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Minnie Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Minnie Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing. This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bullen.
Ben, today's topic is one that we have really not made much bones about in the past, that we're not necessarily fans of this one.
Not the biggest fans, and it's weird because I have a bit of a background in some of this stuff.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, just a little bit. Today we are talking about donk cars.
Yeah, subculture of automobiles that primarily here in the South, but it has spread. I mean, it's spread out. We'll talk about, you know, where it has led to, and I'm sure there are examples in the North as well. But
right.
What's your experience with donk cars?
Well,
kind of intrigued now.
You know, I grew up in the South, and I also don't make much of a secret of it. I'm pretty much a fan of hip hop culture, and I have moved in circles where there are donk cars. You know, yeah, not some of the outrageous ones that we're going to talk about, but yeah, during the '90s, there's that period of time, '90s, early 2000s, where people spent a lot of time and effort and seeing if they could get their wheels from 20s to 22s to 24s, you know, and so on and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the definition of a donk, really, right?
Pretty much.
Essentially, it's a car on enormous wheels.
Yeah, we'll get to the definition and some of the characteristics and, you know, some of the highlights, I guess, of the donk subculture, I guess,
right,
if you want to call it that. And there's so many other names for it. It's called... Well, there's other names for it. We'll get to that.
So, I've driven Monte Carlos and Oldsmobiles, which are not typically really donk cars, but they are land yachts. And I've been in those situations, Scott, where I had friends in high school who were working on this stuff and with mixed results sometimes, because you have to know what you're doing to pull this off.
Sure.
And, you know, people later went on and had shops and said, hey, man, you know what you should do? You should get rid of those garbage stock tires. Get yourself hooked up. I can give you a discount. And I always said no, because as much as I may enjoy mods and kits and stuff like that, this just isn't for me.
You know what? There's always somebody there with that you know what you should do line for just about any car you own, isn't there?
There's always, yeah. They have a club somewhere.
I still get that line when I go to, you know, like a quick oil change place or something like that. Uh-huh. It's like, you know what you should do with this? And, you know, then there's some kind of advice about what, you know, their friend had done with the same model vehicle.
Right. And sometimes it doesn't make any sense.
Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's like, well, maybe I'll think about that because that's an interesting idea, right?
Yeah.
But you with the the potential donk cars, I guess, I mean, you never went for it, right?
No, sir.
So you haven't owned a donk car ever?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess, you know, we should lead this off by saying, you know, you and I both have kind of mentioned our distaste or aversion for donk cars in the past, right?
Yeah, it's just not my thing.
And I think that generally still holds true. I mean, I'm not a fan, and clearly you're not a fan as well. But I do want to tell you that at the end of today's podcast, I'm going to maybe surprise you a little bit by telling you that there's a few things that I feel are maybe a little bit redeeming about this trend. Now, I know the trend is dying. It's a dying fad, but because it's been around for a long time, maybe 20, 25 years at this point, believe it or not. I mean, it's like a mid-90s thing.
You can still see some great donk cars in Atlanta.
Oh, I see them. You know what? We'll talk about that, too. But I see them, I would say, regularly.
Yeah.
Not not all the time, not every day or anything like that, but I do see them around town. And I guess there's a good reason for that with the culture that, that's around there. But I will tell you at the end about three or four things that I find interesting about them. Maybe not completely redeeming about the whole thing, you know, but something that'll make you think like, well, maybe I see your point on that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I totally get it. I'm on board with that. Just from the jump, I'm going to say the same thing that we say when we talked about other things, like, you know, it's no secret. I don't really care for stance cars with negative camber. I think it looks weird and like the opposite of pigeon-toed, but for a car.
Yeah.
So the point that we always have to make when we talk about that kind of stuff is if it's your car, I am a huge believer in that you should be able to do whatever you want with it. Although it might hurt my feelings to see somebody buy a Model A and then kit it out and make it look, in my opinion, dumb. It's still their car.
And it's your opinion.
And it's my opinion, and the twain never have to meet.
Exactly right. So I'm going to, you know, go out on a limb here, Ben, and say that I bet there are a lot of Car Stuff listeners out there that have never in person seen a donk car. In person.
You think so?
In person. Now, that's a big difference because you know, we here see a lot of them in Atlanta.
Oh, man, you're right, aren't you? It just feels like they're everywhere because they're all around Atlanta.
Now, we've got a huge listening contingent in Australia.
Right, yeah.
How many donk cars do you believe are in Australia? I mean, I bet you can count the number on two hands.
You know what? I have never thought about that. Now I feel kind of naive.
So maybe online, you know, they've seen these. They've seen videos of, you know, stuff that's happening
here
in the United States in the South. You know, Florida, Georgia, Texas, you know, somewhere around there. Like Louisiana, that area. All of that comes into play with the subculture that we're going to talk about.
Right.
You know, where this thing you know, originates. But I guess we should probably describe to, you know, people that have never seen one in person what a donk car is all about. Or they call them high-risers. That was the initial term, right?
Right.
But a high-riser, and where it got this donk name, I guess, which is really kind of confusing if you try to look it up. I mean, you'll never find a straight answer about this. So the best answer I can give you about the name is that a car that they call a high-riser, and we'll tell you, obviously there's a reason for that. I mean, with the big wheels and the way that the stance is on these things, it's way up in the air.
Right.
Now, a donk car traditionally is a 1971 to 1976 Impala, and they were given the name because the Impala symbol was referred to as a donkey by owners, or donk for short. Now, that comes right from a pretty typical source. I mean, it's somewhere that, you know, people can contribute information, and I don't know if that is the actual origin of the word donk or not. I can't say for sure, but as far as the car goes, it kind of makes sense. Now, but to me, I mean, you look at the Impala badge, it's an Impala.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a donkey, but I guess people could call it that in just kind of an offhand way.
You know, I just don't know if that's, I don't know how true that is.
Yeah.
I think it's an anecdote and we can treat it as such, but it is true that 71 to 76 Impalas are typically considered the traditional orthodox one. Now, earlier I had said, you know, I mentioned that I owned some Oldsmobiles and Monte Carlos before, and those are also considered, you know, potential donk cars, but not the main one. The main one is and always will be the Impala from that year. But you could also do a Roadmaster. You could also do some Ford models like Crown Vicks, Lincoln Town cars.
Yeah, I've got a whole list of cars if you want to talk
about
them just quickly before. And I guess we'll get back to the characteristics in just a minute. But
oh, crap. Yeah,
you'll kind of understand. That's all right. But you mentioned Impala, the Caprice, Roadmasters, Oldsmobile 98s. Cadillacs are big ones, right?
Right.
Monte Carlo, if you want to go to a midsize model, that's one that's that's featured as well. Anything really that's rear-wheel drive from about 1969 through about 1990. It seems like those are the ones that that are commonly used as these as the I guess the canvas for these vehicles, you know, the starting point.
Right.
And there's also cars. It's not just those cars. There's, you know, Ford and Lincoln Mercury products. So like the Crown Vic, the Grand Marquis or Lincoln Town cars, even some. Well, actually, there's only one foreign vehicle that I can think of that I've seen is a Lexus. that they sometimes use.
Oh, yeah.
Modern versions would be, believe it or not, Ben, Corvettes. Some people are doing Corvettes with these things. Camaros are popular. Hummer vehicles, particularly the H2 and H3 models. And then even some trucks or SUVs like the Ford Explorer or the Chevy Avalanche are some of the common ones.
El Caminos, Bonnevilles as well.
Now, we need to talk about what makes a makes a good donk car. And we'll talk about variations of these as we go through here. But what makes a good donk car to start with, I guess, would be a V8 powered vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Something that's rear-wheel drive, as we mentioned.
Yep.
American built is kind of the traditional thing. The idea is that you modify it to the point where you significantly increase the ground clearance by adding, you know, these large diameter wheels and low profile tires, so that, you know, the vehicle body sits way, way up in the air. And we're not talking about like the monster truck conversions that people were doing for a while on cars where they would put them on top of huge, you know, mud bogging tires or anything like that. These are like tall, thin, supposedly performance tires.
Right.
That are usually, fitted with gold or chrome rims that are very
spinning accoutrement.
Yeah, exactly right. Good way to put that, Ben. All right, so there's a lot of characteristics and there's more to it than that. But I want to tell you also that there's a couple of different names for this. It's not just a high riser, which was kind of the initial term.
Right.
It's not just donk.
Nope.
It's also called a box. It's also called a bubble or a skyscraper. Now I got the origin, I guess, of description of what a boxcar is. And a boxcar is another kind of like a subtype of a high-riser vehicle. And that's usually the 1970 to 1990 Impala or Caprice models that are kind of boxy. You can kind of get a picture of what those are like if you look at just the standard stock vehicles. You'll understand why they're called boxes, because they're very square.
Yeah.
The bubble cars are typically the fourth-generation Caprice vehicles. And that's the one that went through the body change in 1991, if you remember. When the Caprice and the Impala SS came around, I think it was the 7th gen Impala SS, and they had that really swoopy body style. And you see it in cabs a lot, you know, those old cabs. But that's a very popular vehicle to convert into a bubble donk car. I guess I'm using two different terms there, but a bubble car.
Right, yeah. The thing about these vehicles themselves, I feel like I need to amend my statement here, is that when I say they're not for me, my primary thing that kept me from ever making one of my cars a donk, even when I had friends who were willing to work with me and do it with me, was just I like lower cars. I like cars that ride low.
Yeah, I do too.
And that's part of, for me, that's part of the beef I have. But riding in these can be pretty comfortable.
Really?
Surprisingly,
I would think that it would be the opposite. I would think it would be rough, but I suppose if you're doing a custom suspension,
it all depends on the suspension
from the ground up.
Yeah,
I mean, I suppose you could put in there anything that you would like to. I mean, make it as soft, as smooth as you wanted to. Now they've got long wheelbases typically to begin with,
right?
But I would think that would be counteracted by these giant wheels that have, you know, maybe not as much travel as you would think because they would interfere with the body work,
right?
Also, I don't know, how smooth could it be if you're riding around on 30-inch rims?
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this nine-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was not in a car with the 30-inch rims. I was back when it was still a big deal if you had 22s.
Okay, so you mentioned back when it was a big deal. Now, that's a good thing to mention here because this comes from around the 1990s or so. Mm-hmm. And you remember there was a point where 20-inch rims were a statement. That was a big deal.
Oh, it was huge, yeah.
That was amazing because people are used to seeing like 14-inch rims, 15-inch rims on cars.
Right.
That was a pretty standard size. We weren't even really getting to 16-inch rims yet.
And then a guy with 20s would drive by and just laugh at you.
That's exactly right. Those are called dubs, if you remember.
Yes,
That's an old term. I don't know if they're still even using that or not, but they were chrome or gold-colored, sometimes, again, with spinners.
Right.
But then you're right. Then that would progress up to 22-inch, then 24, then 26. And I think they went all the way up to 40 or even 50. I know I've seen 50 somewhere.
Yeah, and there were songs entirely just about the tires, which I love.
Yeah, that's right. Those are funny.
Yeah, I love when people would say, what are you rolling on? A 20. And
I'm impressed.
Oh, man. I can't open the rabbit hole of how many songs there are just about how your tires are better than other people's tires.
Right, I'm mildly impressed. Maybe not fully impressed. Okay, Ben, so you just were singing a little ditty, a little line there from your past, right?
Right.
And this reminds me that, you know, the origin of this whole thing, this whole subculture, came out of another subculture called the Dirty South subculture. Now, yes, we can talk about this, even though it's a family-friendly podcast, right?
Right, yeah.
This Dirty South subculture is all about Southern hip-hop. It's known as Southern rap or South Coast hip-hop or just plain old Dirty South. It's kind of a blanket term for a subgenre of American hip-hop music that originated right here in the southern United States.
Right, yeah. This is, when we're talking about those songs, a lot of the songs come directly from this style and this car being a part of that, which when we talk about it, regardless of how you feel about the music in particular, whether it's, you know, it's your jam or you don't like that type of hip hop or you don't like hip hop at all. One thing that's really interesting about this is that so many cultures have these different ways of expressing themselves with, things like, oh, we modify our vehicles this way. And these are the songs we play about it. Like country music, right? If you just said that you don't, you know, oh, that's dumb that this type of hip hop genre should also be associated with a vehicle. Well, let's think about country music and pickup trucks just for a second.
How about this? I've got another example.
Yeah.
How about rat rods and rockabilly?
Perfect.
That's a good example. I mean, those are inexplicably tied together forever, mm-hmm. probably. And I think that's the same thing with this Dirty South subculture. You know, this the Southern hip hop culture and these donk cars.
You know, I think part of the weird thing for me about this is that I'm realizing I will gladly sit and listen to any genre of music if they're talking about a car.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, a lot of people, if they hear something like that, their ears will perk up and say, you know, I see what I can get out of this, right? Or see what people are singing about, what inspires them, right?
Yeah.
And I think what inspires, I guess, this group to do this kind of thing is, well, of course, the end result. And the end result is a vehicle with oversized or disproportionate wheels, you know, something that ranges from, and you know, it's funny, it says ranges from 20 to 30 inches or more. I'd say 20 is on the low end because production vehicles now come with 20s.
Right.
I don't think that's really a big deal anymore. So dubs are not a big deal anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that's, you know, up in the 30 inch range, now that's getting a little crazy, I guess. That is something that is, you call it disproportionate.
Yeah.
It stands out. It's a caricature of itself.
Yeah, it's a little bit like a Decatora or something because it's very much for the look and the impression where to the point where it maybe isn't as practical, right? So we know that raising a vehicle off the ground to the point that you would be able to have the clearance for 30 inch rims, raises the center of mass and it makes the vehicle, I said less practical. But just for an example, it makes it easier to roll the vehicle.
Ah, yes. Now, see, I was kind of gesturing to my paper here saying that I've got a little bit of here about them being dangerous. Now, a lot of people say that they're not dangerous. I'm going to say, however, that I do think they're dangerous, and I'll tell you why. Because a lot of people will say that, you know, they're not really, you know, racing with these things. It's not a race car by any means. They're not on tracks. They're not really driving fast. However, I have seen plenty of these donk cars here in Atlanta that are on the highway cruising at 80 miles an hour. Now, it seems absurdly fast for a vehicle that is kind of balanced on these really, really high wheels. And when you see one, you'll understand. It's kind of like, you know, the old, what are the wagons? The Conestoga wagons?
Yeah.
I mean, I see it almost like that. It looks like that tipsy, like that tippy, rather, in traffic because it's so much higher than everything else. And it's on these thin little wheels, and they're way up in the air. It just looks like it's precarious in the way it's perched up there.
I see what you're saying.
So the center of gravity has been, you know, It's way, way up. It's like the opposite of stance cars. You know, stance cars are more stable. The lower you go, the more stable you become.
Right.
But these are going higher, and they're going on thinner wheels sometimes, and it just seems like the stability is not there. So I'm going to say that, you know, the way I see them as dangerous, if they're just cruising around in a parking lot or, you know, in a neighborhood, there's nothing dangerous about that by any means. But when you're on the highway at highway speeds, I think it's considerably more dangerous than the stock version of that vehicle.
Especially because braking ability is much less than it would be on stock wheels.
Yeah, that's a strange thing. There's got to be a whole formula that goes into this. You have to increase the rotor size in order to make the stopping as safe as it would be if you had a smaller wheel on this whole thing.
Right.
So it's really bizarre the things that you have to think about when you put one of these together. And you know, when they're putting them together, they do other things as well. There's a lot of custom interior work that goes on as well with expensive audio equipment. I mean, really expensive audio equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Interiors have things like flat screens. They have champagne coolers. They have all kinds of like custom embroidered seats with logos on them, you know, like sports teams or, you know, maybe even personal, you know, family crests, things like that. Just bizarre interiors. I mean, I say bizarre because it's bizarre to me because I've never seen anything quite like these cars inside or out because outside, they usually have these outrageous paint jobs, and I'll say outrageous because some of them have themes, right? So some of them are not just a standard orange paint job or green paint job. They go into products. Like, you know, like almost like you're sponsored, but you're not.
Yeah, you're not sponsored. Castrol is not paying you for that paint job. I love that stuff, though. I love a custom paint job. You know me, man. I'm a sucker for that airbrushed picture of Star Wars on a van or something, and this is the same kind of deal to me.
Okay, I understand what you're saying about somebody's a fan of Star Wars and they might put a picture of Darth Vader on the back of a black van or something like that. Okay,
yeah.
I see that. I understand.
And you're saying this is different.
All right, this is different because this one, let's say that your car has a Lucky Charms theme. Yes, I'm talking about the cereal Lucky Charms.
Right.
You've got the little leprechaun. You've got the you know, the rainbow with the pot of gold at the end
instead of the icon on the hood.
I mean, it covers the whole vehicle. It's like it's you know, Yoo-hoo, the drink. It's Pepsi.
Yeah.
It's Coca-Cola. It's McDonald's. It's
food is a big theme with a lot of these.
It really is. I mean, there's Pac-Man. You know, there's a Pac-Man car out there.
Yeah.
There's some crazy, crazy examples. Gatorade is another one. Mm-hmm. I mean, some bizarre things out there, and they're not, you know, corporate sponsored as far as I know. I mean, none of these are sponsored by, you know, Lucky Charms is not sponsoring a Donk car somewhere here in Atlanta. And, you know, some cars have things like, you know, dollar bill themes. So they'll have like, a, you know,
right.
The car will be painted like a $100 bill with maybe even with the owner's face, you know, on the $100 yeah. bill. Exactly. So,
or like a an eight ball or something.
Yeah, themes like that. I mean, so, you know, these are what they would call fanciful designs, I guess.
Well, these are also, they're sort of the calling card for the person who owns or drives the vehicle.
Yeah. Well, they're highly customized. So, yeah. You know, the person's, you know, they somehow relate to this. And I don't know how you would relate to, you know, the Trix car, you know, the Trix serial car with the rabbit on it. I don't understand that, but, for some reason, you know, it's part of the absurdity of the whole thing. And I think that's the point, is that it's a little bit absurd.
You know what would win me over? Yeah, it's fun. It's cool. Like, I think that it's not taking yourself too seriously. You know, it would win me over, though, Scott, if you and I were at the local BP or whatever gas station and we saw the Trix Donk car pull up, right, to the pump, and we're staring and we go, oh, my gosh, it's real. It's really in real life. What does this guy look like? And when he hops out, he's wearing a rabbit suit. That guy is awesome.
That would be a new twist on the whole thing.
That is a slow clap.
All right. So here's some controversy, I guess, if you want to talk about controversy.
Yeah.
How about that? So,
yeah.
You know, people say that, you know, maybe people that are taking these Donk cars and they're taking old classic vehicles and they're changing them into these, what they call absurd vehicles.
Oh, yeah. The purists hate it.
Oh, they really do, because it's modification to the extreme. It'll never go back to its original state. I mean,
you can't really undonk a car.
It would be very, very difficult to undo what they do, because a lot of these require, some decent amount of body work in order to make those wheels fit. That's one thing.
Yep.
The other thing is the interior packages. You know, the original interior is totally gutted, totally gone in order to come up with these, the flat screens and the champagne coolers that I mentioned before and stuff like that, right?
Right.
So there's a car in particular that I'd like our listeners to go online and search for. And I do this sometimes. And I think that this one you have to see in order to believe it. And it's one that's causing a lot of controversy. And it's not necessarily new. It's something from 2012. But someone has taken a Camaro ZL1 and created what they call the King ZL1. Now, this came from a Jalopnik article. The quotes that I'm going to read you here, because it kind of explains the King ZL1 and what's happened here. Now, this is a gold-wrapped ZL1 Camaro that has been placed atop some 30-inch wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And
also gold.
Yeah, also gold, very very bright gold. And it has a lot of people, a lot of Camaro fans up in arms.
Right, because this is sacrilegious to them, you know, or sacrilege, rather.
Mm-hmm. So some people see it as a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
Others see it as a piece of junk.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. And recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
NFL Total Access, the podcast, is getting you ready for the 2024 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Andrew Levy, and I'll be delivering two shows a week to make sure you're caught up on the very latest NFL news, including every free agency move and how it changes the draft needs of your favorite team. Draft experts and talent scouts, mock drafts, and a few shock drafts, too. NFL Total Access, the podcast, is already on the clock on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that is a debate that people have had about art for centuries. You do have to look at it, and we'd like to hear what you think about that too, because, you know, I feel that my perspective is a bit skewed, Scott, and it's been skewed ever since the last time we looked at chic cars, SH, chic cars, like the cars that very wealthy sheiks own, because those guys, I think, would take donk cars to the extreme. We should get them into it.
Oh, like the Rainbow Sheik?
Remember that guy?
Incredible car collection, which is really, really strange. All right, so I would like to read just one little bit from this article, if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
And the thing that I wanted to point out here is that, you know, whether or not you like this or not, the guy that built this, you know, the shop that built this, he had to kind of defend himself because so many people were outraged about this.
Really?
Yeah, and the place that built it, the builder was a place called 813 Customs. And 813 Customs, is quoted in this article as saying, the King's EL1 required a near-complete teardown and reassembly with bespoke fiberglass dash and door pieces to handle a Radio Shack's worth of speakers and monitors, including including three 23-inch TVs that pop up from the back seat. The outside gets a gold chrome vinyl wrap, and the 6.2-liter V8 also gets a brace of upgrades, such as a Whipple supercharger. All right, that's not bad, right?
Yeah, so it's not just cosmetic.
Not just cosmetic, but, in addition to the supercharger, it said that, however, it can never be used in anger because of the custom-painted 30-inch wheels that make the car as tipsy as Lindsay Lohan at a St. Patrick's Day parade.
I thought you would like that.
That is a funny line, but, yeah. But Camaro fans absolutely hate this car. Other people say, hey, why not? And the guy, you know, the owner of the shop who had to defend himself on his own Facebook page because people were, again, so outraged.
Right.
He said, you know, I'm paid to build cars, even though they're not necessarily my taste. That's what I do for a living.
So yeah.
That's fully understandable that, you know, he's paid to do this. Somebody came in with this dream, this idea, and he said, yeah, I can do that. And here's what it'll cost you.
Right. Which is the point of being in business.
Yes,
you know,
entirely the point of being.
Yeah. So I'm not upset with that guy. I see where he's coming from.
You know, people are upset with, you know, there's one less ZL1 that's going to be out there for them to buy.
That is true.
Or it's just a different version of the ZL1 for them to buy.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think it can't do the things that a ZL1 is supposed to do anymore, though. That's the beef.
That is the big point, is that it's a car that's not doing what it's supposed to be doing, I guess, or what it was initially intended to do.
Right. And I mean, again, if you wanted to spend enough money, I'm sure that he would be glad to change it back if you're paying the tab.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. I mean, it would be a costly.
It would be way more expensive.
Reconstruction. Yeah.
It's pretty easy to pay for a tattoo, but paying for a tattoo to be removed is a whole different ballgame.
And it's very painful.
Yeah. So where else are we going with this, Scott?
Well, I tell you, I think we've pretty much touched on everything that I want to about donk cars and the culture and everything. Because this is one of those, like, you got to see it to believe it type things. If you're not really familiar with it, you got to kind of dig into it and decide for yourself if you like it or not. It's like the stance car thing. It's like low riders.
Sure.
It's like rat rods. It's like anything else. You have to decide if it's for you.
That's a really good point. The one thing I will say is for me, like here, look at this photo. that we, I have a photo here of a car that's maybe on, what'd you say, Scott? 20s maybe?
Maybe even bigger than that. 24 inch wheels.
Yeah, it's
like
on 24 inch wheels, but it's lifted so high that it looks like it's, it looks like those 24 inches are just four spare tires that are in place of some monster wheels that were supposed to be there.
It's the kind of car that you would need a ladder to get into, as a matter of fact. I mean, it's, if the driver were to stand next to it, the bottom of the door would be at his shoulders.
Yeah, and you see this right here. I think maybe they have, I think maybe they're lifting it even further.
Could be hydraulics.
Right. Yeah. Hydraulics on a car. Have we done a podcast about that?
Well, lowriders.
We did lowriders.
I would guess that in, you know,
we touched on it.
I know in talking about hot rods, we've talked about bag suspensions, things like that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, you know, we've talked a little bit about that, but, maybe not a full episode.
I just used to think it was so cool in the music videos when they would have the cars jumping along with the beat.
You know, it is cool, but would I want to own one? Probably not.
I don't know if I could afford the suspension work.
Now, driving around, you know, like on the back corner, like what's real low with the right front up in the air.
Oh, that looks cool.
That does look kind of cool, yeah.
Yeah. Before we head out to try and persuade our execs to give us our own donk cars with some hydraulics, we wanted to end on a positive note. Scott, at the top of the podcast, you said these are not really for me, but I have some redeeming qualities I'd like to mention.
Yeah, believe it or not, there's a few things that I think I find valuable in this whole trend that, you know, of course, is going away at this point. But there's something of value here. And I'll tell you what those are. And you can agree or disagree with this because, again, it's just all opinion, right? Now, one thing in no particular order.
Okay.
By any means. Okay. Yeah. So one thing that I do like about this is that a lot of these owners are keeping a lot of old V8 cars running. And that's pretty good.
Good point.
I like that. I mean, you're seeing body styles that you haven't seen maybe in 10 or 15 years or longer that are coming back as donk cars. Now they're dramatically altered in some way, but it does kind of spark your memory for that model, that make, whatever, and maybe some memories. Who knows? Not in that particular form, of course. You know, you wouldn't associate it with the same way that you saw it then.
Right.
The other thing is that clearly there's a lot of attention to detail in these vehicles, and I like that. Yeah, in some ways, there's a lot of attention to detail. In others, it's lacking in attention to detail. Now, I think that safety isn't maybe as much of a concern in these cars as it probably should be if they're a road-going car. And we talked about that already, right?
Yeah.
Creativity, that's another positive in my book. There's a lot of creativity in these.
For sure.
A lot of problem-solving goes on. And I know that these are big shops that build these things. So somebody comes in with a car and an idea and says, I want this to happen, and the shop is the one who's coming up with these creative ideas. It's not always someone in their backyard, but that's understandable. You know, you take in some of the bigger jobs to some of the smaller companies in town and say, you know, the modification companies, and say, I'd like it to do this. Can you make it happen? And they'll look at it for a week or whatever and decide how they're going to do it, what they're going to charge for it, but they get it done typically. I mean, there's a way around it. And the creativity is something that, I don't know, I always find that something redeeming in a craft.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing, I think maybe the best part about this whole trend is, and this is kind of the last thing that I want to talk about here, this is people that clearly love cars. I mean, there's an enthusiasm for cars. Maybe not, you know, the same type of cars that you and I like, maybe not the same type of cars their neighbors like.
Point of order, they are the same type of cars that I like. All I drive are land yachts.
Good point, but it's a different form of that car, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. So the idea is that, you know, a lot of these people, in some cases, they work on these cars, they repair these cars themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cars that were probably headed to a junkyard.
Right, they save cars, they teach other people.
Yeah, exactly right. So let me ask you this. If someone, anyone, is interested in cars to this level, you know, shows any kind of appreciation or passion for something at this level, is there really anything ever bad about that? I mean, think about all the different types of things we've talked about. We talked about lawnmower racing, bar stool racing, rat rods, stance cars, all different types of individual types of cars. And people are you know, really engrossed in that hobby. Do you think there's anything wrong with somebody who is this much, you know, kind of gung-ho into this type of automobile? I mean, no, I know it's something that's not for you and I, but is there anything wrong with somebody showing that much passion for something automotive?
I think that's a great question. I want to add on to that point by saying, were you about to send us an email that said, okay, guys, I get what you're saying. Caring about cars is cool and most styles are fine with me. But this one, we want to hear about the style of car that you just hate.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't have to be a donk car.
It doesn't.
Anything,
it could
really.
Be anything. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I mean, I guess the wrap up of this whole thing would be to each his or her own.
Absolutely. And there is no better sentiment upon which to end today's show. We hope that you enjoyed this as much as we enjoyed making it. I took a little bit of a stroll down memory lane thinking about growing up in, because, you know, I grew up south of Atlanta and very much like my friends and I were in that donk car culture. I just couldn't put my Monte Carlo or my Pontiac on those wheels.
And we tried to be fair about it. I mean, you know, we're not fans of the whole thing, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah. And there's some technical expertise that is impressive to make that happen.
Some.
Okay. All right. So we're going to get out of here. Let us know what you think about this episode. You can find Scott and I on Facebook and Twitter. You can find all of our podcasts, and we mentioned a few, on our website, carstuffshow.com. Don't be fooled by iTunes, because they only give you the first 300 or so, and we're at what?
We're somewhere close to 600.
Yeah, we're almost at 600 episodes.
We're in the 590s for sure now.
Yeah. Oh, the countdown begins. So what should we do for our 600th episode? Write to us and let us know. Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.
I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. Welcome to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing.
This week, I'm talking to acclaimed musician and entrepreneur, Pitbull.
I think that education is the real revolution, because as much as we speak about all the problems that there is in society and the world today, my mother's always told me, son, don't worry, the world's always been coming to an end. Don't let it scare you out of living.
Listen to Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.